This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
This song hits me right in the all feels department. I love you. You can turn it up. It's a little John Fogerty. Turn it up there. Josh, why not, right? It is opening day. We got a little sunshine. That's right. I know they've been working on the grass, working on the stadium out at Bison Stadium tomorrow. That's when they have opening day in Buffalo. But the reason why I love this song, here we go. Because, of course, it speaks to me. Here we go. Let's hear it. Just a little John Fogerty. Position, baby. I love it, Josh. That's why I love this song so much. In part because it's also a great baseball song. Anytime you go to a baseball diamond, last year it was a big, I'd bring like a portable Bluetooth speaker for my son's travel team, which I was the head coach of last year in the house team, but the travel team. And I would put up on the, I'd put the Bluetooth speaker on. And that was the first song we always warmed up to, was Center Field. It's a cool baseball song to get in the feels.
It's the best baseball song.
That's John Fogerty right there.
Best baseball
song. It's got to be, right? What position did you play when you played? You had to have played a little bit of Little League or high school or something.
Oh, right? Yeah. I played all through high school. Center field and left field. Mostly left field, though.
See? I was a center fielder. That's why it speaks to you. It's not just a good song. It's a good baseball song. But, you know, if that's the position you played. Welcome to opening day. Major League Baseball, a very early opening day. Now, look, I understand that they've already had games in baseball. They started out internationally, you know, as they have the last couple of years. But here we go. The Yankees, the Mets, the Blue Jays, the Guardians, the Nate Geary Royals, right? The Phillies, it doesn't matter. Pirates, you're a Pirates fan. We got that. We got Orioles fans here in Western New York. Red Sox are at the Rangers. It's a good day. Opening pitches, Yankees opening pitches, 3:05 today. Is that the earliest? I got to look here. Yep, I think that's the earliest. In fact, yeah, that's right. Milwaukee at New York on ESPN at 3:05 p.m. You have Baltimore and Toronto at 3:07. Now, that's interesting, right? Why would they be at 3:07? I have a couple theories. I don't know this. Maybe there's something out there that I haven't seen. I have two theories on why Baltimore-Toronto first pitch will be 3:07, whereas Milwaukee and the Yankees will be 3:05. First theory, they have to have somewhere where it's truly the opening pitch. That's probably what it is, right? Where you say the opening pitch, first day, Major League Baseball season, first full day at Yankee Stadium. If you make them both at 3:05 and Berrios runs out there for the Blue Jays and he throws a pitch before Rodon of the Yankees, then you'd say, well, the season started in Toronto, which is fine, but that's not how we intended it. That's number one. The second reason is it possibly because of two anthems being played in Toronto? I don't know. Playing the American and the Canadian, so it takes a little bit longer. It's an extra 2 minutes. That could be it, too. I doubt it. I think it's because they want one actual starting Major League Baseball opening day pitch to happen, and this year it is at Yankee Stadium. Not always. It used to always be Cincinnati, I think, right? It wasn't St. Louis. Do you remember, Josh? I think it was Cincinnati always had the first opening day pitch, if I remember right, back in the day.
I don't know. I'm trying to I thought it was always
St. Louis?
For some reason, I think Chicago is sticking out my head, but I don't think that's right.
Yeah, no, Chicago might have had it a couple times. I think Cincinnati was the traditional like opening day. That went away years ago, and of course now we do everything different. So today is Major League Baseball opening day. We're not gonna necessarily break down every game or team, but it is a good day whenever you think about it, because I think mentally it gets you over a certain hurdle.
You were right, it was especially Cincinnati.
Yeah, Cincinnati is the traditional opening day. Like, I don't know when the last time they were the actual, like, first pitch of the season, though. They are still home today at 4:10 p.m. then. They're taking on the San Francisco Giants. But they were traditionally that team. Juan Soto suiting up for the Mets today. Ugh. That hurts. Now, it's not like he had a long career with the Yankees. He was there 1 year. But to see, like, this is what the Yankees usually do. With like, I mean, I know late in their career for some guys like Daryl Strawberry and Dwight Gooden, right? The stars of the Mets wind up playing for the Yankees later in their career. Well, in this case, it's the other way around. I mean, Willie Randolph did go to the Mets later, but Juan Soto, after the year he had in New York, incredible year, helping the Yankees get to the World Series. Now he's with the Mets. $768 million, I think it is, right? Up to $800. Who's really counting when you're talking about that many millions? Just very, very tough to see as a Yankees fan, but I think the Yankees did a good job this year with taking that money and spending it where it needs to be spent. If you're a Yankee fan like me, you're hurting to see Soto there, but you're also hurting knowing that Gerrit Cole's out for the year. Louis Gil, the reigning AL Rookie of the Year pitcher, he's out for like 3 months. Don't know if the pitching can hold up. Probably not. They don't have Soto in there to help out with the offense to take the slack up from the pitching, but they did, you know, add a couple of bats, Paul Goldschmidt now in New York as well, and they're going to do something very unique. The Yankees are apparently going to have a catcher lead off in Austin Wells. It is funny to me overall in baseball how it's completely changed since I was a kid and even not too long ago, I guess, where it was always the fast. That we just played John Fogerty. I said that was my position, center field. I was the center fielder leadoff hitter. Steal bases, right? Because that's what leadoff hitters did. Fast people, got on base, stole bases, get on second base, getting in scoring position. That's not the case anymore. Yeah, you want somebody to get on base now, but gone are the days of the Ricky Henderson leadoff guys. You could still do it. Nothing wrong with it. But the league has, the way that analytics has changed the game has really changed how batting orders look. It's not your Ricky Hendersons and your Vince Colemans anymore leading off. It's just guys who get on base, and then let's see where we go with our number two guy, who now is your best hitter in the lineup. It was always, what was the traditional batting order? It was really fast guy, gets on base, put him first, really fast guy. Second guy is your contact hitter that's not going to strike out, not going to hit for a lot of power. He's going to push him over to second base. He's going to bunt. He's going to slap it, and you're going to get a guy on second base. And your third hitter, he's going to drive him in with a nice hit because he's your best hitter in your lineup. Your fourth hitter is your cleanup hitter, cleaning up because whatever's left on base, you can clean up. And if he strikes out, who cares? We're starting over with number five in the next inning. That's the way it worked for like 100 years in baseball. Now, not anymore. Now it's your first batter can be a catcher. He just needs to get on base. It's a guy who gets on base. Austin Wells in this case. Second batter, that's your best hitter. Third batter, you're basically your second best hitter. Fourth batter, still kind of a cleanup. And then fifth guy is really even more of an all or nothing guy. But that's the way it's changed over the years. So today is opening day in baseball. Tonight, how about this? We got opening day in baseball. And we have the Sweet 16 tonight, beginning this afternoon, late this afternoon, tonight. What's the first game? BYU, right, tonight? You were just talking about this in the update a little while ago. It is 7:09 p.m. BYU against Alabama. That's tonight. Also tonight, you have Florida against Maryland right after that, tipping off about a half hour later. Later tonight, Texas Tech against Arkansas. And what is my final game I'm missing here? Thursday. Oh, yeah, Duke against Arizona. That's in between as well. This is really a very, very, I'd say, blue blood in a way. There's some blue blood programs in the Sweet 16. But it's, as we talked about earlier this week, it is just full. The entire Sweet 16 is major conference teams. Power four, as they call it now. It used to be the power five. Now, you might say, wait a minute, BYU's there. BYU's in the Big 12 now. It's hard to keep track of where these teams are and what conferences they're in. You got teams that were in the SEC that are in the Big 12 or, you know, Big 12 in the SEC, Pac-12 now in the Big 10, right? I mean, what are we doing? But all the teams that are still alive are in a major conference. And it, to me, obviously speaks volumes of what's happening with NIL and the portal, but obviously even beyond that, it's the expansion, it's the money. I mean, Houston, right? Houston's in the Big 12. What do they used to be in the Southwest, I think? The SWAC? I think they used to be in the SWAC. I don't even have to go back and look. They had a Heisman Trophy winner, Andre Ware. Wait, they weren't playing in a major conference at the time. Conference USA they were in up until 04. Looking at where they had here. They were... where'd they go here? Well, anyway, the point is, you get the point I'm making, that this particular Sweet 16 is a who's who of college basketball conferences and power teams. We're going to talk about that here in a minute. Got a fun game to get a consensus here on who we like and who we don't in the Sweet 16. But I want to set up today's show because it is packed. Like the Sweet 16 is with all these great conferences. We have our own Sweet 3 joining us today. What would I call it? The Terrific three.
Whoa.
There you go. You got it. We said it at the same time. There you go. The Terrific Three. Paul Hamilton at 10:30. Sabres tonight take on the Pittsburgh Penguins. Sabres can catch the Penguins, can't they? In the standings. Where are they both?
The Sabres.
Yeah, they're 5 points back with three games in hand.
They could also pass the Flyers tonight with a win.
John Tortorella stepping down as head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers. That happened about an hour ago or so. A little over that. Yeah, but the Sabres, if they win tonight, they would be within 3 points of the Penguins with three games in hand. They're very, and 3 points of the Bruins with two games in hand. Well, going to see if they play tonight, but Sabres have games in hand. I'm not making the case that they're going to start climbing the standings and get into a playoff spot. That is not the case here. They are 11 points away from that. But I think as I sit here, Josh, would you be comfortable in saying, if I asked you right now, you would say yes or no, are the Sabres going to finish in last place in the Eastern Conference?
I'm comfortable in saying no, just because of the fact that Boston's on a terrible skid. The Flyers, John Tortorella just steps down like I don't think the Sabres are going to stay in last in the Eastern Conference. But like you said, it's not like they're going to be climbing mountains here and making a playoff push.
No, they probably, that's as far as they go, though. They could very well get to seventh in the Eastern Conference. Probably behind Detroit, Columbus, the Rangers, the Islanders, all fighting for playoff spots up there. Detroit's falling back a little bit, but they're still in the mix. They're at 72. That's, I think, probably too tough of a hill to climb to catch them. But I do think the Sabres, with three games in hand on all of these teams, the Bruins, the Penguins, the Flyers, as of right now, and five or less points back from all of them, I think the Sabres have a legitimate chance to climb out and get up all the way up to seven if they continue to play hockey the way they have been, by the way, which has not been too bad. Had a big win the other night, obviously, against the Ottawa Senators. I say big win, not for the season and standings, but a nice win downtown. And downtown tonight is where the Sabres take on the Pittsburgh Penguins. 7 o'clock is when the puck drops. We will have the game for you, and of course, pregame coverage starting at 6 p.m. here on WGR and along the Sabres radio network. Paul Hamilton joins me at 10:30. Then at 11 a.m., Pete Lembo, head coach, UB football. Doing a great job over there. UB is, they're having their spring practices right now. And they have some questions around the roster that we can ask Pete Lembo about, including quarterback, including replacing Sean Dolak, and what the outlook for 2025 looks like right now for a team that went to a bowl game and won last year. So we'll do that with Pete Lembo at 11 a.m. And of course, he loves his pop culture, his 80s. We got to throw a few references in there, maybe a couple questions. Pete Lembo at 11 a.m. At 11:30, we'll break down the Sweet 16. If you're in a Sweet 16 bracket of some sort, you're looking to a couple maybe ways to bet on it, some teams, you're looking at underdogs, favorites, doesn't matter. We'll do that as well. And have a special guest come out. I've never talked to him, but I reached out to him on Twitter because it looks like he does some really good stuff analytically and otherwise. Evan Mayakawa, I believe I'm saying his name right. We'll make sure when we get in touch with him. I've never spoken with him, but he has some really good charts and data and information on Twitter, on X, and we will get with him on the Sweet 16. That's at 11:30. Time right now, though, with my producer, Josh Schmidt, to play Sweet 16 Survivor. Here we go, Josh. Let's do it. This is where we play a game. We take all the Sweet 16 teams, and for whatever reason we decide, it can be because we had an ex-girlfriend that went there one time and we still are holding it against that school. It can be because we don't like the coach. It can be because they're a rival. Whatever the reason, you don't like the colors. It does not matter. We can choose to eliminate any team we want as we move on through Survivor to get to one team that we're like, above all, we will root for this team in the Sweet 16 bracket. Josh Schmidt, I'm going to have you go first because that means you will also have the final cut on Sweet 16 Survivor.
Oof.
So you will be number one.
A lot of pressure today.
Yes. Who are you eliminating first on Sweet 16 Survivor and why?
Easy answer here. Got to go with Duke. They've won too much. They're too loaded. They're too good. Just get them out of here. Let someone else do it for a while. Just go away. Just stop. I'm speaking for a lot of people when I say that.
Yeah. I hear you. All right, so Duke is out. Man, this is really tough. I have to be really honest. I think I could take all of these and just throw them out at once because there's no one I really truly want to root for a lot of reasons. But there are some teams with connections we've talked about that I will root for the players and the coaches more than the school or the team. But the first team that I'm going to knock out here is Arizona. There is really no kind of reason at all for me to root for Arizona in this tournament. Arizona is a team that I know when different coach, they had a lot of allegations a few years ago. I know that other teams go through this as well, but Miles Simon and Mike Bibby, like, yeah, that was great back in the 90s, but what's Arizona do for me these days? Nothing. So I'm gonna eliminate Arizona here in my Sweet 16 Survivor. Who's next for you?
This is tough. Let's go with... All right, here we get into the ridiculous reasons. Let's go with Texas
yes.
Tech because of the fact that they gave us Patrick Mahomes. Get him out of here.
I love it. I love that reason. I love it. Texas Tech, out. Okay, I am going to stay in the state of Texas And you talk about ridiculous reasons. After what happened in Houston last year for the Buffalo Bills when they went there and Josh Allen had his worst game of the season, thinking about Houston beating the Bills in the playoffs in 2019, I have no reason to root for the Houston Cougars in this spot. So I'm going to eliminate the Houston Cougars based entirely on football, not basketball, but that's why they're out.
That's fantastic. I love it. That's a great reason. I'm going to go with, for my next pick, I'm going to go with Purdue. They busted like every single one of my brackets. I really thought they were going to be a bust this year. I had High Point winning in almost all my brackets. So thank you for Purdue for ruining that. And for that reason, they're out.
You sound like Shark Tank. For that reason, I'm out.
I was wondering if you were going to get the reference there.
Yes, I did. I got it for sure. Okay. I'm down to a couple here that I'm looking at. And I think, let me just grab this team for a second. Okay. Yeah. Honestly, like, I have this. Okay, this has nothing to do with him, but he can be a reason. Has nothing to do with Stephon Diggs actually going to Maryland, but now that I'm thinking about it, that's actually a reason on top of this. And he just went to the New England Patriots. Maryland's just kind of boring for me. Like, okay, they had a nice win the other night at the buzzer, actually. That was cool and all. But, like, what's Maryland? They switched conferences. What's Maryland done? I mean, they won it in 02. They've pretty much haven't done anything in basketball since, to be quite honest with you. I got no feels for Maryland, so I'm gonna eliminate Maryland here.
All right, I like it. I'm gonna stick with my Chiefs reasonings from before. I'm gonna eliminate BYU for giving us Andy Reid. I mean, come on, like,
wow.
There's so many connections here that we're just kind of missing. Like, BYU should have been out five picks ago.
Did you see the story? There's a BYU kid whose grandfather invented the tater tot.
Wait, maybe I might want to bring him back now. That's pretty good.
His grandfather invented the tater tot. He's the founder of the company that invented tater tots. Isn't that crazy?
That's wild. Tater tots are great.
Okay, so man, where am I going here? I think I'm going to eliminate. I'm just gonna eliminate Michigan State. And look, I don't despise Tom Izzo. But it's kind of like they're in my face again. And every few years, Michigan State just kind of becomes in your face in basketball for whatever reason. And I'm jealous here. I am. I really am. Because they're there. Syracuse isn't. But, yeah, I don't really love seeing them. I think, honestly, I'll be the first to tell you sometimes, Tom Izzo pixie dust. I'll say that. But go back and look at the history. He's had some great tournaments. He's also had some stinkers, by the way, like a lot of coaches. So, yeah, I'm going to eliminate Michigan State. I don't know. I hate to do it, but I'm going to do it here.
That's my favorite college basketball team. Like, when I watch college basketball, it's Michigan State.
Oh,
it varies for me from sport to sport, okay. But for basketball, it's them. And also the tie to Ryan Miller. Like, come on.
Yeah,
what are you doing?
I know.
I'm going to go ahead and same reasoning as you with, like, Maryland. I'm going to eliminate Ole Miss. They just, they're not really anything special for me. They're just kind of there. I don't know. They're just not exciting.
I was going to eliminate Ole Miss there, and my reasoning would have been, can we decide what we're actually calling them? Is it Ole Miss or Mississippi, right? Can you decide on a name here, please? All right? You're right. I like that. Okay, I'm going with a true blue blood here. I'm going to eliminate Kentucky. They don't have the pizzazz of Pitino or Calipari anymore. Mark Pope's doing a really nice job there, but it's Kentucky. They've won a lot. Yeah, it's cool seeing Ashley Judd rooting for them and everything, but seriously, Kentucky. They won a lot at basketball. I don't need them advancing on anymore, so I'm going to get rid of Kentucky here.
I was wondering how long they were going to survive. They might have been my next pick, too. I'm going to go with Michigan. They've won too much recently. They've been too successful recently. Just take the back seat for a little while. Take a breather.
My guy Dusty May. You're going against Roddy Gale from Newport High School, by the way.
Hey, I'm not. It's nothing personal.
Right.
It's nothing personal.
All right, no, I get it.
If your football team wasn't so good, maybe I wouldn't have voted him out.
Okay. I am... This really hurts me because our guy Carlin Hartman is there, but I can't have my Florida friends basking in the glow of another national championship after they've had football and basketball. And this is totally a Schadenfreude reason, which is I want them to hurt and suffer. So nothing against my buddy Carlin Hartman from Buffalo, who's an assistant coach in Florida. Okay. But I can't have Florida win another national championship in a college sport because I've had that happen too much, and I'm tired of hearing and seeing my friends or people that root for them or went to that school to rub it in our faces when it happens. So I'm eliminating the Gators.
Wow, I thought they were going to make it all the way to the end for you. I did not see that coming. That drastically changes my next pick, I think.
Okay.
All right, so we've got, I think it's, if I'm remembering correctly, we got Auburn, Tennessee, and Arkansas left, correct? Is that it?
And Alabama.
Oh, and Alabama. Ooh. I'm going to go with Auburn here. Get rid of all the one seeds.
Okay.
One seed shouldn't win it. Let's go. Upsets.
All right, well, Auburn's my team to win it, actually. I picked them to win it, but I think they might have been my next pick to eliminate here, too. It's Auburn. They're a football school. What are we doing, right? Come on. They should be a football school. They haven't really been. Speaking of football schools, yeah, I'm really sorry. I went with one Buffalo connection. I'm going with another now, but I mean, Alabama, right? I mean, it's Alabama. They're football, and now they're here in basketball, and Nate Oates is, you know, he's fun to watch. His team is fun to watch. They've been a little inconsistent. Even he kind of doesn't like his team at times this year, and he talks about how the effort and defense and all of that, they're exciting. Actually, that Alabama-BYU game can be really exciting. I'm going to eliminate Alabama from this Sweet 16 Survivor because I am kind of tired of seeing Alabama on the big stage winning a lot in sports.
I can agree with that. I'm completely fine with that.
Okay, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. We are down to Arkansas and Tennessee. It is up to you, Josh Schmidt, to pick the team to survive Sweet 16 Survivor here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Easy pick for me here. I'm going Tennessee. Love the state of Tennessee. I know it's not, the university's not in Nashville. Nashville's a great city, though. Knoxville is, too. Going Tennessee all the way. Sorry, Arkansas. You're also kind of a football
school. So you're picking, you're eliminating Arkansas.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. I built that up in the wrong way, but I'm eliminating Arkansas, picking Tennessee to win it all. Let's go Volunteers. And hey, think of the party too. They took down a whole field goal, like a whole field goal post when they won a football game. Like, come on, that'd be
that was Vanderbilt, right? Wasn't that Vanderbilt? They were marching through the streets.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Yes. Yeah, that was Vanderbilt. But still, like, same state, same vibe. Like, it'll be a great time.
How cool. Tennessee against Kentucky. I got nothing wrong. I got no hate for Tennessee. They wear orange like Syracuse. I'll go with it. It's a different kind of orange. You know, I'll go with Tennessee with you. Okay. All right, let's go Vols. Sweet 16 tonight. Paul Hamilton up next here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Sabres taking on the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight. Downtown, puck drops at 7. Pregame here at 6 on WGR. Paul Hamilton joins me now on the West Her Hotline. Paul, I just had a conversation with Josh. I said, as of right now, would you say yes or no if I said the Sabres will or will not finish in last place in the Eastern Conference? I think we both agreed that they will not, based on how they're playing and the teams ahead of them are playing, and the Sabres have 3 games in hand. So, no, they're not going to get into a playoff spot, but I'm comfortable in saying they might very well be able to pass the Penguins, the Flyers, and the Bruins.
At least the Flyers. I mean, the Flyers just are, and the Bruins are both in free fall right now. And the Sabres actually play the Flyers this weekend. So it could be as early as this weekend. But I would agree. The way things are going right now, it's looking like they at least will get out of the cellar. And as I said, if you wanted me to pick a team, I would say probably the Flyers.
I hear practice going on in the background. I see on social media that James Reimer is in the net once again. Very interesting, Paul Hamilton, that James Reimer might get his 3rd straight start here in goal.
Yeah, that is interesting. And there's a couple of – I've been thinking about this, and I've been saying all along that I just think they should be riding Luukkonen right now just because of where they are in the standings. If they were in contention for a playoff spot, I would say definitely Reimer would be the guy that should be in goal. You know, he right now gives you the best chance to win. Lindy Ruff might be looking at it a different way. He's looking at that he's got to teach these guys how to win, and how to play the right way on a consistent basis. And part of playing the right way on a consistent basis is getting good goaltending, which they've gotten, which has helped them win two games that before the game you would have thought, well, they probably aren't going to win this, especially as how tired they could be with three games in four and four and six. But good goaltending can be an equalizer right away, and that might be his thought process is this team doesn't know how to win. And this team doesn't know how to play consistently. And if you start in goal and you have consistency in goal and making the big save, that gives you a chance to win and gives you a chance to maybe get used to that winning and what you have to do to win hockey games. So that might be his thought process here.
I am very interested, and I've talked to you about this. We've even talked, I think, last time you were on about the goaltending going forward for this team. I mean, at this point, you'd have to expect it's Luukkonen and Devin Levi next year with the big club, right? Or am I just assuming too much?
No, I would think so, especially if Kevin Adams is still around. Right now, neither are proven. I mean, it looked like at the end of last year in his last 35 games that Luukkonen was proven as a number one goaltender. He had some of the best numbers in the NHL for those 35 games, but it has not worked out that way this year. He has not played like that on a consistent basis. At times he has, but not enough. And every time Levi gets up, it hasn't worked in the NHL. He's been handed the job twice now and has not been able to hold it. But now he's also been getting the development that he should have gotten before, that he's now getting, you know, that he got last year at the end of the year. It was late, but he got it. And this year he gets pretty much a full season in Rochester to take that team and do what he wants. His resume would tell you he will be a good NHL goaltender. Just from the fact that he is arguably the best college goaltender that's ever played. And he's an all-star in the American Hockey League and has had that team in first place for some of the year this year. So, you know, then it would tell you that he can make the jump to the next level. It just hasn't happened yet. So it's still you'd be going into the season with ifs again, which is what the Buffalo Sabres have been doing for how many years, going into the season with ifs. And or you could look to trade for a top flight goaltender who you're going to have to pay $8, $9, $10 million and decide we have to have goaltending. If we don't have goaltending, we're going nowhere. And you can do it that way, and then, you know, pick one of your two young goaltenders you want to be the backup and send the other one on his way. I mean, I hate spending that kind of money on goaltending, but maybe I have to reevaluate my thought process there because, you know, Vasilevskiy makes a lot of money and they won the Stanley Cup, but Carey Price made a lot of money too, over $10 million, and the Montreal Canadiens never won with him. So, but Bobrovsky makes a lot of money in Florida. And it just seems like a lot of the time. Now, Chicago didn't pay their goaltenders a lot when they won three Stanley Cups. You know, I don't know. It's an interesting thought to think about.
A lot of people wondering about Lindy Ruff's future. And I think post-game after the Senators game the other night gave us a clue into how this is going to shake out, which to me, and you tell me if I'm interpreting it the same way as you, feels like he will be back behind the bench next year.
The way he was talking after his 600th Buffalo Sabre win the other night, it sounds like it's a job unfinished that he wants to finish. And he's very annoyed with himself that it hasn't been better this year. He said, you know, he said, I always think I can fix things, and I haven't been able to fix this. And it really bothers him. And he says, I need to get this right. And that told me everything I needed to know, because I wondered if this season just drained him to the point that didn't want to coach anymore. But it didn't sound like that the other night.
No, it didn't for sure. And I wonder if this team did make the playoffs, if he would have kind of ridden off into the sunset and said, hey, my job here is done, I'm handing it off. And maybe the reason why he's coming back is because that didn't happen. You know what I mean, Paul?
He desperately would want us to win a Stanley Cup for this community. He lives in this community in the off season. He's coached this team for many, many years in two different stints. It just dominates his mind. I mean, he desperately wants to win a Stanley Cup for this community, and of course himself too. But it's something that it drives him. It's something that burns inside of him. It's something that's annoyed him that he's not been able to do it. So Yeah, I think that's his motivation, is trying to win a Stanley Cup for this community.
Follow Paul on X at PM1717, where he has tweeted out that he does not see Josh Norris, Jordan Greenway, or Jason Zucker on the ice. All right, any status update on them? I know you can't officially yet because you haven't heard from Lindy Rupp, but what can you tell us about these three players and possibly what's going on?
Yeah, we weren't around yesterday because the Lindy Rupp canceled practice. So after the grueling schedule that they had. So we weren't around yesterday to get updates. But Norris, is we talked to him personally before the Ottawa game, and he's frustrated with it. It's not going as fast as he'd like it to be.
What's the injury, Paul? Has he said?
No, he hasn't said. But he said it's something okay. He had, then it was fine. And it was somewhere around the Detroit game that he re-aggravated it. And it's something that he's been kind of going back and forth with all year, but it really hadn't been bothering him for a while. Now all of a sudden it was, and he kind of thought he'd be back by now, and hasn't been. The question was asked, might you shut it down for the year? And he said no, he's not looking at that at all. He said it's just basically right now a day-to-day process to try to go forward. Greenway, all we know is that that is a lower body injury, and it was not from blocking the shot in that game, because he only played a few more shifts after he blocked that shot, but it's something else. It's not that. Zucker is new, so we'll find out after the morning skate here that we're watching what's up with him. And Lafferty, Lindy Ruff, last time we asked about him, said he's actually coming along faster than they thought he would. So he was more encouraged about Lafferty's groin injury maybe coming around and being where he'd be able to be available for the team too.
Paul, there's not a lot of things I'm right when I say things, but I think I've always been right on one thing. John Tortorella can be a nice culture changer, but it doesn't last with him. He is out in Philadelphia. It's just he wears on people. We know his style of coaching, and maybe they even, you know, were better than people expected last year, but it didn't go back that way this year. 28-36-9 overall. He is out. He has stepped down. What do you think about the change being made? Obviously, Tortorella connections to the Sabres organization from years ago, but how about the change coming in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I had a conversation with Daniel Briere about John Tortorella last year, and he just said, I love the way he coaches. He was on board with them. He liked how he did. But, you know, this is a results league, you know, and they certainly aren't getting results, and the team does not seem to be responding to him. The same thing with Laviolette with the Rangers. He's won cups, but he just doesn't last. And it looks like, you know, he's still the Rangers coach, but for how much longer? I mean, it seems like some coaches, they just wear on teams. They just wear on teams, and then it just doesn't work anymore. It works for a while, and then it doesn't work anymore. And I think those are two coaches that we right in the front of the line when it comes to that.
Yeah, for sure. Tortorella, years ago.
And John's won a cup, too, with Tampa Bay.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, when I say that, like, yeah, he's a championship coach. He's a Stanley Cup winning coach. But if you look at his career, it kind of goes the same way in a lot of stops, which is he gets there, and there's a spike, and they play better. But as it goes on, it just starts to wear, and then eventually they become a team that says, okay, we got to make a change. Now, look, that's not different than a lot of places, but it is kind of the MO of John Tortorella and where it goes. His coaching style, Paul, you've been around him. Do you think it works in today's NHL and with today's professional athlete?
Well, Lindy Ruff had to change his style. I mean, yeah. And he's talked about it himself. And, you know, I used to talk to former players about how he used to be ruthless on Thomas Vanek and Derek Roy. I mean, he would belittle them. He would just in front of teammates and everything. And Lindy Ruff admitted it himself. He talked about Vanek. He goes, yeah, I've had conversations with Thomas Vanek recently. And, you know, he goes, I was hard on Thomas Vanek. But that's not what you can do with players anymore. It has to be more of a softer approach. Players seem to have more leverage on coaches now. It seems like players, if they decide they don't like coaches, can get coaches fired, depending on who the players are. And that's not the way it used to be. It used to be the coaches had the hammer. And I think nowadays the star players have the hammer with what they want to do. And, you know, it just is a different atmosphere. You can't be that type of coach Tortorella or Ruff or Scotty Bowman or you name the guy was back, I hate saying this phrase, but in the day. You know, those types of coaches don't last in the NHL anymore.
Paul, before I let you go, Alex Ovechkin, 6 more goals to break Wayne Gretzky's all-time record. They play the Sabres a couple games from now. Let's hope it doesn't happen. He didn't need to probably 4 in their next game and a couple against the Sabres or 3-3 or whatever. But, you know, it might not happen by the end of this year. This is a really interesting situation, isn't it? Obviously, he's close. He needs 6, but they only have, I think, 7-8 games remaining, something like that. I have to take a look exactly what it is. I don't know. Are you dialed into this? Are you really interested in when this happens, how it happens, everything like that?
I was actually hoping it did happen against the Sabres because I would have been there.
Yeah, so I can understand that, too.
I would have been there for that, so that would have been cool. I've been dialed into it, and you know, it's the TV coverage and everything is going to ramp up, and the fans in Washington like lost their minds when they found out that their broadcasters wouldn't be broadcasting it, so their broadcasters are just going to do a broadcast that's not on the air, and then once the goal comes, they will re-air it, the broadcast. You know, it'll become a broadcast then, so fans can, hear their guy call the goal and watch the game with their guys, because just like when Judge was doing for the home run and everything, although baseball's different, they didn't lose their local broadcasts, but it's the national broadcasts are going to take over for this.
Yeah, I misspoke. They have 11 games left. He needs 6 goals. I went back and looked and said, and I thought to myself, how long has it taken to score the previous 6 that he's had? It was 12 games, actually. So this is going to be right on the cusp. But you know what's going to happen, Paul. They're in a good spot. They've already clinched a playoff spot. They have a really good record. They're going to feed him to try and get this record towards the end here. I mean, they have the Blue Jackets and then the Islanders. And then how about this? And considering him and Sid, they play the Pittsburgh Penguins in game number 82 in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. With the rivalry that is.
Yes.
And the networks would like... That's yes. Their dream. That's their dream right there.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Paul, I'm going to let you go. I know you got some stuff going on with practice.
Yeah, they just
practice
ended practice.
Today.
They're just kneeling and stretching now, so I got to head down and get some pregame stuff.
You do that, and we'll get you information about the injured guys, too. Thanks a lot, Paul. We'll talk to you later.
Yep, take care.
All right, you got it. PM1717 on Twitter. If I had more time with Paul, I wanted to ask him and get into, and we will at some point, Ovechkin and Gretzky. I just think it's a fascinating discussion because, yes, I am fully aware it was way easier to score goals in the 1980s when Wayne Gretzky played. There's no doubt. I also want to remind everybody, Wayne Gretzky played in an era where you could not pass the puck over 2 lines. Do you remember that when that happened, Josh? They made the change?
Two-line pass. That was the stupidest rule ever.
Right, but think about it. I mean, yes, goalies were definitely not as good. They didn't do the butterfly, and they stood up, and they had smaller equipment. I'm not debating that. It was easier to score, quote-unquote, when Gretzky played on a goalie. They also had no 2-line pass allowed. You could not stretch the ice like you could now and get them going. And they played in smaller rinks. I mean, the Odd and the Boston Garden were really small compared to the rest of the rinks. They made a change in the NHL at some point and said, every rink has to be the same size. So in that regard, it was also harder to score some goals. He also has, as we've talked about before, no one will ever touch his assists record. So he wasn't just scoring the goals. And yes, this is me opining and saying and, you know, my love for Gretzky because he's a childhood hockey hero. And I hate seeing his record broken, but he deserves it, Alex Ovechkin. It is interesting. Did you know the number of games played? So Ovechkin is 6 goals away from breaking Gretzky's record. Do you know how many games they played compared to each other, Josh?
Isn't it like Ovechkin's behind him by like 10 or something right now?
6 now, yeah.
Oh, 6.
6.
Wow.
He's 6 goals away and he's played 6 less games ever in the regular season. It's amazing. It's interesting. So, yeah, that's happening. The Sabres do take on the Washington Capitals in Washington. Is that Sunday? I think that's Sunday, right? At 3:00. But he would need 5. He needs 6 goals in 2 games, including that game. They play at the Wild. That game is tonight at 7:30. That's Ovechkin. That Ovechkin watched tonight. How many will Ovechkin get tonight and need before he gets to play the Sabres? If he gets a hat trick tonight, he can break it against the Sabres with a hat trick. Think about that for a second. Which is what Gretzky did, by the way, when he broke the all-time single-season goals record. He scored a hat trick in Buffalo to break the record. I just think it's a great discussion, Ovechkin-Gretzky. I think there's a lot of nuance to it as well because eras change, lots of things change, technology changes, rules change. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back here. We'll wrap up your first hour, then get to Pete Lembo at the top of the hour on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Before I do, though, I have to remind everybody that Paul Hamilton's appearances on WGR, as always, are brought to you by Equitable Advisors, thinking about today and planning for tomorrow, and by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Take a timeout here on WGR. All right, let's get connected with our fans really quickly here. Brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Couple things about Gretzky and Ovechkin. Fred tweets in, wait a minute, playoff goals do not count for breaking Gretzky's record? No. In fact, if you count all of Gretzky's goals, regular season and playoffs, and all of Ovechkin's goals, regular season and playoffs, Ovechkin would be 55 behind Gretzky. It's a regular season record. So, because guys don't play as, you could do a playoff record, but it's the regular season goals record that he's after. It's the all-time goals record. That's what counts. Playoffs are separate. So when you hear all-time records, it's always regular season. Playoff home runs don't count. You got to hit the home runs in the regular season. Playoff touchdown passes don't count. You got to throw it in the regular season. So no. Thank you, Fred, for the tweet. But no, he is going for the all-time goals record, which is regular season. If we counted all goals by Gretzky, regular and postseason, Ovechkin would be 55 behind. So thank you for that. Also, thank you very much to Will, who tweets in and said, and he corrects me, and this is right. Thank you for the reminder. I was like 8 when it happened. He said, Gretzky did score the hat trick in that game in Buffalo, but the first goal was the one that broke the record. And that is right. When Gretzky came to Buffalo, he had 76 goals, which was tied with Phil Esposito for the all-time record. He scored a goal, and then had two more. And I think all of it happened in the third period, if I'm remembering correctly. But either way, I could be wrong at that. But he scored a goal to break the record. Then he scored two more. Gilbert Perreault had a hat trick in that same game, by the way, for the Sabres. So there you go. Thanks a lot, Will, for the tweet as well. We'll take a timeout. Pete Lembo, head coach of the UB Bulls football team, joins me next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.